Please follow along now as I read from the Gospel of Mark, chapter 7, verses 13 through 24, as we are continuing our study through the Gospel according to Mark. Now, I'm reading from the New King James Version, but please be advised that as we go through this passage in the message and the sermon, I will be referring to these verses again, but using several different translations. I prefer the majority text, the New King James Version, but I find some value in other translations. For now, please follow along as I read these verses. When he had called all the multitude to himself, and let me just stop there and remind you that last week we saw one of these blistering encounters between Jesus and the leaders of the Jews. And now that that's over and done with, he speaks to the people and to his disciples. He says to them, "Hear me, everyone, and understand. There is nothing that enters a man from outside which can defile him, but the things which come out of him, those are the things that defile a man. If anyone has ears to hear, let him hear." Now let me just stop there and point out that this little section is technically a parable. You know, parables are not always about a man went out and did this and that and the other. That's certainly one format of them. But what he's doing here is also parabolic, so to speak. And the format here where he says, "Hear me, everyone, and understand," at the beginning, and then at the close, he says, "If anyone has ears to hear, let him hear." That is commonplace, understood language that you use when telling this kind of statement or making this kind of parabolic declaration. Anyone who was standing around hearing Jesus, when they heard him say, "Hear me, everyone, and understand, and if anyone has ears to hear, let him hear," they automatically alerted to the fact that he's going to be doing a special type of discussion or language use, and what we call speaking in parables. Verse 17, when he had entered a house away from the crowd, his disciples asked him concerning the parable. And so he said to them, "Are you thus without understanding also? Do you not perceive that whatever enters a man from outside cannot defile him, because it does not enter his heart, but his stomach, and is eliminated, thus purifying all foods?" And he said, "What comes out of a man, that defiles a man. For from within, out of the heart of men, proceed evil thoughts, adulteries, fornications, murders, thefts, covetousness, wickedness, deceit, lewdness, an evil eye." As we'll hear in another translation, that means envy, envious, being envious. "Blasphemy, pride, foolishness, all these things come from within and defile a man or a person." And so ends the reading of God's infallible, inerrant word. Now, these verses, as we launch into the application of this text, these verses show you how Jesus evaluates what is good or bad in a person. If you listen closely to what he says there, you find what his priorities are in terms of living in relationships with God and other people. And so as we consider these three things that I've listed for you on your outline, or that you can list, it's my hope that we can evaluate our own priorities and thereby discover what should be important to us. Here is the first thing, the externals. The externals. As we have now seen from last week and also in earlier verses in Mark, Jesus has been engaged by the Pharisees and the scribes in, to put it mildly, a conversation about tradition. Those men were very upset because Jesus' disciples didn't observe the traditions of the elders. They were not keeping the ceremonial laws. But Jesus, after condemning them for their hypocrisy, spoke directly to the issue of this being overly focused on external things, things that were in essence trivialities. And so, to use sort of a modern way of expressing it, he's saying to the Pharisees, "You are not what you eat." You know, people some years ago, I guess when the modern health food movement started, somebody popularized that phrase, "You are what you eat." But from the standpoint of what really defines a person's character, the essence of who they are, it's not true. Listen again to what Jesus says in verse 15, this time from a different translation. "It's not what goes into your body that defiles you. You are defiled by what comes from your heart." See, the Jews put great emphasis on the outward observance of certain traditions and ceremonies. Jesus, however, challenged them directly on that point. So, in other words, eating food with unwashed hands does not make you unclean. Well, the problem goes far deeper than the external situation and the outward circumstance of your life. Jesus is saying that external things are neither good nor bad. You know, what makes a thing good or bad is the person who's using that thing. There's a great deal of truth, I think, in the Second Amendment phrase that a lot of gun owners, I think, properly say, and that is that guns don't kill people, people kill people. Things in themselves are neither bad nor good. God created all things to be good. It's people who corrupt the use of things. Now, something else that we can take away from this focusing on the externals is that what you see may not be what you get. Things are not always as they appear. You know, people who are rich may appear to be poor. People who are sad may appear to be happy. So on that note, in dealing with people, you must never make the mistake of assuming that you know what they are really, really like simply by looking only at the external circumstances of their lives. See, it's not quite so much what people do, but why they do it that tells you who they really are. Jesus is making this point that the outward observance of a certain ceremony is not an accurate indication of a person's righteousness. Now, to put it in our context, you know, you can go to church and get very actively involved. You can sing in the choir. You can be on a committee. You can give your tithes and offerings and your time. You can observe the sacraments, and you can outwardly be as faithful and committed as anyone else who's a member, but yet be doing it for all the wrong reasons. Like somebody sarcastically but wisely observed, sitting in church no more makes you a Christian than sitting in a garage makes you a car. We may appear to be something other than what we really are. So that leads then to the second major heading of this, which is the internals. The internals. And what I'm calling the internals here are what you are in truth, in essence. This is how God sees each one of us. You know, in this day and time, if you go to a bookstore, for people who still go to bookstores, and you might be deciding whether or not you're going to buy a particular book, you know, you'll read the endorsements on the back cover and on the inside flap of the book. Or more likely in our day and time, you might go to Amazon.com and read all the reviews down at the bottom of the page about a particular book. But the question is, are those reviews and endorsements true or accurate? Well, sometimes they are. Sometimes they're not. You know, another sign of the times is maybe the need to revise that statement and say, you can't judge a DVD by its cover. You can't judge a book by its cover. You can't judge a DVD by its cover. If you join, say, Netflix, you may read all the great reviews about a TV program or a movie. But then, unfortunately, when you rent the movie or watch the movie, you realize that you've been subjected to clever marketing schemes designed to get people to watch or view badly made movies. And then also there's the issue of what the so-called movie review experts say. You know, there are people who are, from the eyes of the world, well-respected movie reviewers, but they sometimes endorse and like movies that are completely and totally morally offensive. But the point is that a book should be judged by its content, not merely by the cover and the endorsements. That's the point Jesus is making. He said, "The things which proceed out of the man are what defile him." And then the disciples come to him and ask him to explain this parable. Now let me read you his response again from a different translation. This is from the New Living Translation. "For from within, out of a person's heart, come evil thoughts, sexual immorality, theft, murder, adultery, greed, wickedness, deceit, lustful desires, envy, slander, pride, and foolishness. All these things, all these vile things, come from within. They are what defile you." In other words, if you really want to know who you are or who somebody else is, look inside. You know, there's a neat little acrostic or abbreviation that comes to us from some of the early days of computer programming, and it's called GIGO, or GIGO, G-I-G-O. It stands for garbage in, garbage out. And it means that when you put garbage or lousy programming into a computer, you will get out of that computer garbage and lousy programming. And it assumes that a computer has a clean and neutral environment that is untainted one way or the other when you put the programming in. So that when you put in good programming, you get out good programming. But you see, for human beings, the same is not true. For human beings, when garbage comes out, it means that garbage was already in. In other words, when you see garbage coming out of a human life, it means that the garbage was already in that life. If they're sinful attitudes, they will eventually manifest themselves in sinful actions. See, the problem with human beings, however, is that those sinful attitudes are there from the earliest days of life. And if you don't believe that, you talk to anybody who's raised children. And whether you remember your own situation or not as a little child, but I mean from the earliest moments after you were born. I mean, you can be less than 2 or 3 or 4 or 6 months old or a year old. And you can take a child who's never been influenced one way or the other by anybody or anything. And they are born being disobedient, angry, and overall having a bad attitude about things. Even the happiest babies disobey. We're born with a bad record and a bad heart. So then the only solution for us is to become transformed and receive a new spiritual nature. When you get right on the inside, or better yet, when God sets you right on the inside, the outward behavior will be right as well. But the difference, see, will be that what you do then externally is going to reflect accurately who you are internally. You will not simply be acting like a Christian. You will be a living, true disciple and follower of Jesus. So then we've got the externals, the internals. Now, the last thing here that I want to mention that I think is pointed to and referenced in this overall discussion is or are the eternal or the eternals, if I can continue to use the plural. And I could have easily titled this message to some extent, "You Are What You Think." But then having realized and appreciated the central importance that our thought life plays in the construction of our character and our Christian witness, where does that point us? If it's true that we are what we think, if we are what we are on the inside, where does that point us? Well, it points us to the eternal. It points us toward that which God desires for you and me. You know, in our better moments, I think that all of us want to be what God desires us to be. And in this remarkable parable, Jesus allows you to see what God considers to be important. I remember many years ago hearing the famous line from Shakespeare that a rose by any other name would smell just as sweet. And you know, as a boy or a younger person, I never could quite, what is that supposed to mean? It seemed confusing to me. The full phrase is, "What's in a name? That which we call a rose by any other name would smell as sweet." So here's the meaning. If someone, say, changed the rules of English grammar and the flower that we've always called for decades and centuries a rose was officially renamed some other name, well, even though it was now being called something else, it would still smell just like a rose. So then in reality, a thing is what it is, not what someone calls it. You know, names are assigned to us based on our outward circumstances. And those names are given to us by, sometimes we give those names to ourselves, and sometimes, more often, they are given to us by other people. And what I mean is names like sinner, failure, stupid, dummy, all of those kind of labels that are put upon us. But you see, what you are called, either by others or by your own self, that doesn't determine who you are. It might speak of those external circumstances, but it might be wholly inaccurate. So, for example, a failure is not someone who fails. You say, what are you talking about? If somebody fails, then they're a failure. No, you see, in reality, the people who fail most are the ones who end up succeeding. You see, you only get to success by taking risks, and risk-taking brings many, many failures along the way. Let me just give you an example from the modern world of business. when Steve Jobs and Steve Wozniak decided to create Apple computers, they had many failed efforts at trying to get people to buy their new idea about computing. Many years later, when it was a very popular company, though not nearly as popular as it is now, Steve Jobs hired a chief executive from the Pepsi-Cola company to come in and run the company for him. It wasn't long after that that the guy he hired fired Steve Jobs. Jobs eventually came back and, of course, died in 2011. But even by then, it was one of the most wealthy, prosperous countries in the history of the world. But you see, that road to prosperity and success was dotted. It was marked every inch of the way by failure. You only get to success by taking risks, and risk-taking brings with it many failures along the way. You see, you know, a failure is someone who doesn't even try. So then, this is another important lesson that you want to take home from this study, I think. You must cultivate the inner person, the person that you are really on the inside. Now, at this point, for those of you here or those of you listening by audio, I need to address a concern that some people probably already have arising in their minds. Some folks are going to hear what I've said to this point, and they're going to think, well, what's all this inner man stuff, this inner person, this cultivating your mind business? That sounds a lot like the self-help nonsense I get from these pop TV preachers with their, you know, whether it's a Robert Shuler or Joel Osteen or any of the rest of them. I realize Shuler hadn't been around for a while, but he was sort of one of the granddaddies of this stuff. Well, friends, I realize the concern that might be along those lines, but let me suggest that if you're taking that attitude toward what I have said, it may mean that you just don't know your Bible very well. Because Paul spoke to this very issue where he wrote in Ephesians 3:16, and I'm going to give it to you from three different translations. NIV, I pray that out of his glorious riches he may strengthen you with power through his Spirit in your inner being. Literally, in the Greek, it says inner man, anthropos. I mean, the technical word for man is, that means inner human being, technically. The New Living Translation, I pray that from his glorious unlimited resources, he will empower you with inner strength through his Spirit. The New Jerusalem Bible, in the abundance of his glory, may he through his Spirit enable you to grow firm in power with regard to your inner self. So obviously then, the Apostle Paul was concerned that followers of Jesus be given inner strength and be aware of the need for it. Because without that change on the inside, the external changes run the risk of becoming merely superficial, as they were with the Pharisees. This is what Jesus was trying to tell them. You may have it right on the outside, but you're not right on the inside. And you're not right technically on the outside because you're not right on the inside. You know, churches have been, since the beginning, full of pretenders. But you must be on your guard as you listen to these words today that you not be numbered among them. But you see, the mere fact that there are pretenders in church, well, that certainly means that there is a reality to be pretended to or to move toward. So having settled that, we're left with this question. How do we cultivate the inner person and develop inner strength? Well, you cultivate the inner life by nourishing your spirit and feeding on the Word of God. You know, you can feed your spirit, or you could say mind. You know, these words are interchangeable. You can feed your spirit on the things of God, namely His Word, prayer, study of, say, the writings of theology and something like the Westminster Confession, fellowship in church, serving the Lord. Or you can allow your spirit to be influenced by the things of this fallen world system. You say, well, what is a fallen world system? You're living in the middle of it. You want to see and encounter the fallen world system? Walk outside the church door. Go to the shopping mall. Especially turn on your TV set or get on the internet. You've arrived at the fallen world system. And in verses 21 to 22 here, Jesus mentions this list of those things that can proceed out of our inner being when we are being influenced by the fallen world system. And it should come as no surprise to see that that list is comprised of those things that are the standard fare of almost every kind of entertainment that we know today. Evil thoughts, sexual immorality, theft, murder, adultery, greed, wickedness, deceit, lustful desires, envy, slander, pride, and foolishness. I've just outlined for you any TV time slot from six, well, it doesn't matter, 24 hours a day. Turn on the TV on any program, just about, even the local news, and you'll get all of those things packaged for you in either, dramatic presentations or movies or documentaries. If you feed your spirit with evil things like those, then you'll find yourself behaving in a manner consistent with those things. So what should you do? Well, what you do is you take those attitudes and you throw them out. And then you cultivate your spiritual life with the good things of God's kingdom. See, you're only as strong as your inner spiritual life. And if you find that flowing forth from your heart are attitudes and behaviors like the ones mentioned in that text, see, you can have them replaced with love and peace and joy and forgiveness. But the key is being in a position to be influenced by God's Spirit. Listen to what Paul says in Romans 12, 1-2. And I'm reading it from the New Living Translation. He says, don't copy the behavior and customs of the world. You know, the New King James, the King James, be not conformed to this world. Don't copy the behavior and the customs of this world, but let God transform you into a new person by changing the way you think. Be transformed by the renewal of your mind. When you dissect the Greek text, the shades of meaning behind those words in the Greek mean exactly what they've said here. Let God transform you into a new person by changing the way you think. Paul says, then you will learn to know God's will for you, which is good and pleasing and perfect. So there Paul speaks of the results and the reality that your mind can be changed or renewed, transforming you in the process. But again, how do you do it? Well, let me say again, you put aside everything that is ungodly. Now see, this is real spiritual warfare. You're engaged in the spiritual warfare of capturing every thought so that it will conform to God's laws and God's ways. And that means casting down imaginations and thoughts and attitudes and any inclination which is not of God. That's the first step. And then the other thing is you replace those things which are not of God with the things that are. We can see a prescription for this in Philippians 4, 6-8. I'm reading from the ESV this time. Paul says, do not be anxious about anything, but in everything by prayer and supplication with thanksgiving, let your requests be made known to God. And the peace of God, which surpasses all understanding, will guard your hearts and your minds in Christ Jesus. Notice that, your heart and your mind, the inner person. He says, finally, brothers, whatever is true, whatever is honorable, whatever is just, whatever is pure, lovely, whatever is commendable, if there is any excellence, if there is anything worthy of praise, think about those things. So there again is the emphasis on thinking. You must intentionally spend your time thinking, contemplating things which are of God and rejecting the things which aren't. It is simple and as challenging as that. But there's another thing we can do. That is encourage each other in this struggle. You know, as I've described this inner spiritual battle, it really is very personal, isn't it? It's a very private thing that we have to deal with here. But I don't think it's God's intention that we struggle with this in private. That's why we are called together in the church to be about the business of struggling together and encouraging one another. If I may aspire to tell my own parable, or wherever I got this story from, I don't even remember. But here is a modern day parable. Listen to this very strange, disturbing story. It's a scene with a man laying in the street, bleeding. He's the victim of a hit and run driver. He needs medical help immediately. But to all the people who've gathered around him trying to help him, he keeps pleading, don't take me to the hospital, please. And surprised, everyone says, why? Why not? They're begging him. And he answers, because I'm on the staff at the hospital. It would be embarrassing for them to see me like this. They've never seen me bleeding and dirty. They've always seen me clean and healthy. And now I'm a mess. And the people say, but the hospital is for people like you. Can't we call an ambulance? No. He says, please don't. I took a pedestrian safety course and the instructor would criticize me for having been hit by a car. But who cares what the instructor thinks, they said. You need medical attention. But he said, well, the problem too is the admissions clerk at the hospital, she would be very upset. Well, why is that, they said, pleading. Because, he said, she always gets upset if anybody for admittance doesn't have all the details that she needs to fill out her forms. I didn't see who hit me. I didn't know the make of the car. I didn't get the license plate number. She wouldn't understand that. She's a real stickler for records. Worse than that, I don't even have my Blue Cross card. And they say, well, what difference would that make? Well, he said, if they didn't recognize me as I'm looking right now, they wouldn't let me in. They wouldn't admit anyone in my shape without a Blue Cross card. Look, just pull me over to the curb. I'll make it some way. It's my fault that I got hit. And with that, he tried to crawl over to the gutter while everybody left, leaving him alone, shaking their heads. Maybe he made it. Maybe he didn't. Now, does that story strike you as rather strange and rather ridiculous? Well, let me tell you, friends, unless you haven't caught on to the analogy, something like that happens on any Sunday in far too many churches. Now, right along with that, let me also tell you about a pastor who had a conversation with some active church-going Christians. I mean, Christians who were regularly in church. And he asked them this question. He said, what would you do if on a Saturday night you got caught in some sinful activity and it made the news? And without exception, they all said, we sure wouldn't go to church the next morning where everybody would see us. Now, let's be honest, friends. Would you? Would I? Or would you think like this? The members would turn their backs on me. They would look at me like I was strange and I didn't belong there anymore. Some of the more self-righteous types would accuse me of being a hypocrite. And those who normally sit next to me in church would be embarrassed and not know how to react because they didn't know how everybody else felt about it. They really wouldn't know how to react to me being a fallen, dirty sinner. Now, that pastor who had this conversation said that in the spirit of that conversation, all these people that he was talking to decided that if they got caught in some public sinful activity, they would probably be better off going to the local bar or pub instead of to the church. You know, at the pub, well, they would find sympathy and real understanding from fellow sinners. You know, you'd walk in and immediately somebody would say, look, pal, this isn't the end of the world. It happened to me and I lived through it. And somebody else might say, well, I see you slipped up and you got caught. Don't let it get you down. I know a good lawyer who can help you if you need it. And maybe somebody else would come up and say, you know, you really seem more like one of us than you did before. Now we know that you were just like us. You see, the tough question that came out of the conversation between that pastor and those people was this: where should real love and understanding be found and compassion? In the pub, in the bar, or the pool hall, or in the church? You know, is the church really going to be the church until every Christian, to follow the analogy, hit and run over by some sin, begins to plead, take me to the church. My brothers and sisters are there. They care for me. I can get well there. I'm a weak member of the body, but when I hurt, the strong members will look after me. I don't need a paid-up blue cross card. Yet, in that conversation, there was not one person who said that they would feel welcome in the church where they had been attending if they'd been caught in some public sin. See, too many people are quick to judge others based on external circumstances. And in so doing, we can make a serious mistake. Personal experience can tell you that sometimes bad things do happen to good people. You know, if we only look at the external circumstances of someone's life, we may get a totally false impression of who they are. For example, is an unemployed person lazy merely because they lost their job? Does someone who's been diagnosed with cancer, does that mean they've been smitten by God because they're an evil person? Does a mistake on the job mean that somebody is a poor employee and their whole goal is to undermine the whole company? Do children who refuse to come to Christ or live for the Lord, does that automatically mean their parents are moral failures? The modern day Pharisees who seek to judge people on the basis of external appearances, they're going to find themselves just as mistaken about things that are really important in life as much as those ancient Pharisees that we read about today and last week. Now, the Church of Jesus Christ ought to be especially sensitive to the real needs of people, the needs that lie under the surface of the external circumstances. Now, listen to me very carefully as I close it with these statements. The church should be a place of love and support, a place where people can find health and healing and forgiveness, and yes, discipline. But we in the church need to emphasize what is truly important and de-emphasize the trivialities. Let us pray.